Today on Building Remote Teams, we have Range. Range is a really interesting company made of some ex-Googlers, where their team of a dozen or so members have a total of one person working remote, just one. They have some really interesting practices for them to be inclusive of this one person. On top of that, we'll talk about why people gossip, how to reduce meetings, and simple ways to build rapport and vulnerability on a team. Stay tuned. As you know, Building Remote Teams is a brand new podcast. And to celebrate our launch, we have some really awesome discounts to give you from some of our favorite tools for remote teams. We have discount tools for 1Password, Donut, Hey Taco, Carrot, BirthdayBot, KarmaBot, and a ton more. All you need to do is to go to buildingremoteteams.com and subscribe with your email. You'll get a link to the page with all of the recommended tools and discounts that I mentioned above. Now, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Building Remote Teams. Yes, it's the name of the podcast. I'm here with the two guys from Range. I'm here with Dan and Braden. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Hey, real pleasure. So we're doing it video for the first time just because, you know, people might want to watch it this way and consume it versus kind of the audio, you know, traditional way of doing podcasts. So we'll try this, see how it goes. So first, maybe introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about your team dynamic. Are you guys partly remote, you know, hybrid, all remote in an office? You guys are together right now, so that kind of leads to it. And then maybe tell us a little bit about what Range is about.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So I'm Dan P. Pius, one of the three co-founders at Range. I'm an engineer by background, worked at Google for a long time, which is where I met Braden, and then ran engineering at Medium, which is where I met Jen, third co-founder.
Yeah. And we're mostly here in San Francisco, but we have one remote person up in Portland. And it's actually been remarkable to see just one remote person on the team changing the culture of the team here for the better. It's been really great.
Yeah, it's really nice to have the flexibility when if you're feeling sick or you have some like bad family schedules that you can just work from home and dial into all the meetings, know that everything's just going to work.
Nice. So, and Braden, you wrote a book as well. Is that right?
I did. We stacked our microphone on top of a bunch of books that were in the office, and none of them are my book, actually, because I just tend to give it away. But I wrote a book on design sprints, which I co-authored with a bunch of my coworkers at Google Ventures.
Okay, that's great. So you guys have one person working remotely. Are they, you know, how, one thing that I've noticed is it's probably being the only remote person has got to be the hardest thing because everyone's kind of hanging out and maybe they're maybe a bit of an afterthought. Like, it sounds like you guys are pretty intentional about that, just the way that you said how that one person has maybe changed the culture. But like, how is that kind of work?
I think when we got started, we wanted to make sure that we set Chris up for success. So we just looked at all our processes, and Sean, one of our teammates, actually cataloged all interactions and which ones would be remote friendly and which wouldn't. And then we actually tried to figure out like, how can we make these more inclusive? And in practice, even though a lot of us are in the office together, we're often not in the office together. So even when you're co-located, you're actually acting remote. Like, we're off at the customer meetings, people are working from home. So just the general like remote first mindset helps everyone, even the people who are in the same city.
I love it. So you guys really were deliberate about looking at those processes and coming up with that, set it up, because I think sometimes maybe someone falls into it where they're, you know, they just hire this cool person remotely and they just keep going as if they were all going as they were before. And they haven't, you know, incorporated some of the processes too. And so maybe that's challenging. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And I think as well, we've structured our time very deliberately here at Range as well, because there's sort of a balance between being interrupted too much, but you can't get any focus. And then, you know, on the other hand, like feeling like you can never interrupt anyone and being stuck. And so either ends of those spectrums are bad, no matter whether you're remote or local. But if you don't have that kind of cadence set up where you've got that balance in mind and you're managing it actively, then things can go really wrong. So like one of the things that we have done here is that we set up, you know, two times a week, we have a meeting we just call collaboration. And it's just a time where everyone can bring up any topic that's on their mind. It could be, for me, I often have designs to bring. For engineers, they might have demos. We might talk through some thorny issue. It's not a status report meeting where everyone's explaining the things that they're planning to do and the things that they've done. It's just to collaborate. And it's been interesting, by having those meetings kind of laid out throughout the week, it gives us time to talk about that stuff with less interruption. But then it was also, when we switched to remote, just a wonderful time to bring in Chris for those conversations, because they're not happening as much at the desk kind of impromptu. They're happening in these kind of dedicated bursts of interaction.
Very cool. One thing we haven't done is I want to talk about range a little bit, because I think that will talk a lot about, you know, culturally who you guys are as a company and what you're trying to do.
You want to go?
Sure. Yeah. We make software that helps teams work better together. And that's a range of things. But one of the things we realized at the beginning is that teams go through a bunch of different processes on a regular basis. They'll update each other about what's been happening. They have, you know, recurring meetings, and they always like are setting goals and trying to reach those goals. And there's very few products out there, almost none really, that hold those processes together for a team and help make them all work together. So that's what Range does. It's daily check-ins so that you can keep kind of a general awareness of what everyone's doing. That's particularly helpful with remote teams. It's goals so you can figure out where your team is going and kind of relate that back to the daily work. And then it's meetings. So how do you facilitate regular running meetings and make sure the notes get sent out automatically and all that jazz?
Yeah, so it really cultivates transparency and situational awareness for the whole team. Because one of the things we found when we were looking at teams is that there's just like a disparity in information awareness. So your objectives might be in a spreadsheet, but half the team doesn't know where the objectives are. Or people are doing stand-ups, and then maybe they have to go to a doctor's appointment for a kid, and they miss out on some really important context. So there's an inclusion aspect to the work we're doing, as well as supporting remote teams. And to go back to like the conversation previously with this scheduled meeting that we do every like Tuesday and Thursday, that also undermines some of the more like default communication channels, you know, the water cooler effect that end off being not very inclusive practices.
Was there anything? Yeah, I think that sounds great, right? In making these processes that are kind of easier to follow. It's, you know, you try to make it, I could get a sense you guys are trying to make it more fun as well. But maybe what are some deeper things that happen that you've noticed with either your own company or companies that have used product like Range, just either emotionally, culturally, probably, certainly they're more productive, I would imagine, but you know, how do people feel intangible it is when they have all of these processes working?
Yeah, so I think there's some very interesting trends in the workplace. They're heightened by remote work and distributed teams, but they affect everyone, which is generally a sense of loneliness and disconnection. And if you look at a lot of the research into high-performing teams, like psychological safety is obviously the top predictor, but what creates psychological safety is a sense of belonging. And what creates belonging is vulnerability and trust. So in current workplaces, we don't have these belonging cues that need to be reinforced in order to generate the vulnerability and trust that leads to high performance. So it might sound weird that software can support this, but really the daily habit that we have has these nudges laid in around like sharing your mood and answering team questions, which essentially act as small moments of vulnerability where you're renewing the belonging cues with your team. And that's actually one of the most like exciting things when we rolled this out, is that we had these hypotheses about how the product would work, and then see those actually come into effect at companies, and people like actually really love using these tools.
Yeah, we don't talk about our team questions much, but in this habit of giving a daily update about what you're doing, we put in a little question that helps teammates get to know each other. And we did a bunch of research on how the world of psychology can build trust, and they've done studies with people in the lab, just getting them to answer questions back and forth. And they were fascinating. If you start out with very simple questions and then ask questions that require more and more vulnerability to answer, people start trusting each other more over time, because you start to see each other as human beings. And so we didn't take exactly the questions from those studies. We modeled the questions that we have around that. So it starts out with things like, how was your weekend? Which is a remarkable humanizing question, really. Mm-hmm. We all have time away from work. We all have things in our life that are important to us. And particularly when you're on a remote team, I think you don't always have permission to talk about that stuff. You know, it's like easy when you're walking through the hallway to mention a ball game you went to or something you did with your kids. But when you're on a meeting, on a video conference, it can feel very much like, well, we're here, we're doing work. Everyone's a cog in a machine.
That's
we're getting
totally
it done.
True. Yeah.
And a big part of it, whether it's in Range or other meetings that you have, is making space for those broader connections. Yeah. So we start with a simple question like, how's your weekend? And then we kind of ratchet it up to other questions that take a bit more vulnerability to answer. And then that creates trust on the team.
Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, that's a totally different take on the traditional stand-up of, you know, what did you do? What are you doing today? How can we unblock you?
To some extent, yeah. But if you go to Scrum and Agile roots, it's the stand-up is a ritual where you create a community and a sense of belonging and a sense of togetherness. And yes, there's some tactical components to it about information sharing, but getting everyone face to face is one of the main like benefits of that stand-up routine. It just turns out that stand-up routine, but it just turns out that in-person meeting isn't practical in the grand scheme of things. And then there's a bunch of other things that come into play. So in homogenous groups, it can feel very connected, but then as you add diversity, it can be actually kind of an exclusive like format. So these cognitive biases, like the next in line effect, which mean that you're actually not going to be paying attention, or different personalities might not feel like speaking up or sharing their work, or one person goes into great detail about all the amazing work they did, and this other person was like, yeah, I shipped a bug fix. So it ends off not being very like, they're not having equality or equity in that structure.
Wow, that's powerful. How does the processes of, you know, just everyone being on the same page in terms of knowing what's happening in the company, you know, being able to disseminate maybe top down or even from the different teams, the other teams where normally it wouldn't matter that they care about, because it sounds like that's something that you guys are trying to incorporate where everyone can see what the teams are working on.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that people don't care about what other teams are doing, but yeah, I remember at Google when I joined, it was just such a weird, crazy culture. I remember very clearly being in the orientation room on my first day, and there was a laptop in front of me, and they tried to tell me about all the healthcare that I was going to get, but I was too fascinated by this laptop in front of me, which had the entire launch calendar for unreleased products on the intranet. So it took me a long time to learn how to get my healthcare card, but from that first day, I knew a lot about what was happening in the company around me. And I didn't really realize how special that was, you know, coming from college or academia where things are just kind of transparent by default. And it just kind of felt natural that you would go into a big company and you'd be able to look up any individual person, what they're working on. That transparency is huge. It helps you understand what other organizations, other people across the world are working on. And it starts to break down the silos that everyone really hates in larger organizations. The tribalism that starts to happen when you wonder, what is that team over there doing? Why aren't they working on the thing that I care about? If I were them, I would do it this way, you know? And the more that you both see the work that people are doing, and the more that you see them as human beings, the less that kind of tribalism starts happening, and the easier it is to work across those different teams and locations. So transparency is more than just a value you need in your company. You actually have to put it into practice to see those benefits.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah, and then there's this dark side of transparency though, which is something we also think a lot about, which is you drown in transparency. So we went from these workplaces where there were these silos and information wasn't flowing freely to having almost too much transparency, and then you just can't shift through. You can't sift through the noise. So one of the things we're paying a lot of attention to is push versus pull. What information should you be pushed, and what can you go and look for if you're curious or need to figure out what another team is looking for?
Oh, so it's really So there's really a balance there between those sides.
Yeah, and we think about it in terms of like what should be the bandwidth of the channel between two people in this network. If me and Braden are working really closely together, there should be a high bandwidth communication. But if you and I are any tangentially related, we should still be connected. It shouldn't be a completely like zero, you know, volume connection, but it should be slower and less, you know, less high bandwidth.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's change gears a little bit. You guys naturally, of course, your products looks great. You guys have thought about it deeply. You know, Braden, you've wrote a book on these design sprints, which are extremely intense, deep collaboration experiences. And you have at least Chris, you know, out who's remote. How do you guys, how are you able to incorporate him? Presumably it's a him, right? Is it a guy?
Yeah.
How do you incorporate him where you can have the same experience of having a design sprint where everyone's in the same room with this massive whiteboard and they're deeply able to be interactive with one another?
Yeah. I mean, well, we actually haven't done any design sprints here at Range, which sounds strange, but you know, there's all sorts of different tools in the design kit toolbox, and we use those tools all the time. We just don't structure them in an intense week like that. One of the things that I found in consulting was that people are so busy working on so many different projects with different people, they rarely have a week to focus on a really hard problem. We don't have that challenge. So, like, we focus on these big problems all the time. So, you know, how do you do that kind of collaboration remotely? It is a bit of a challenge, but when it comes down to it, there's there are a bunch of tools today that make the visual side of it way, way easier. That might be like, I use Figma. And so when I'm sitting and trying to talk to Chris about a piece of design work, we use it just like Google Docs. I can point to things, you can move stuff around. It is really incredible how that changes how you work together. And it's just like being at someone's monitor and pointing at something. It's just as good. But then for the other stuff, like we have a recap meeting every Friday where we talk about all the things that went well that week, all of our noble failures that week, you know, and then we do a couple demos. But we used to do that with Post-it notes on a whiteboard. And when Chris joined, we had to find another way to do it. So now we just use Google Presentations, and it's a little bit janky, you know, like
it's super janky, but the jankiness makes it fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a little bit hard to add a GIF, but you can do it. And then when someone adds that GIF, it's that much more meaningful. So yeah. So, you know, any of these types of things that you do collaboratively on the whiteboard, I mean, honestly, a lot of them are just making lists and prioritizing those lists. And you can do that in a spreadsheet. It's boring as hell in a spreadsheet, but it's essentially the same task. So
yeah. Yes,
that's how we approach it.
Yeah, I think like to think about it from like a meta point of view, there's a lot of these processes and tools that exist for collaboration. And instead of thinking, how do we make this tool work remote? Start from the end. Like the tool is a means to an end. So start with the goal, which is that we need to collaborate over this design, or we need to figure out how to solve this customer need, and then work back to how you can solve that in your context. And you can pull tools from different places or different pieces, but you will have to reinvent them. But I think if you start from the process, like process first, how do we make that remote? It's not going to end well. So start from the outcome.
So, okay. That makes sense. Conceptually, can you make it concrete for me? Like just maybe an example of the outcome that you want, and then back tracing the, I don't know did I cut out? Does it work?
Yeah, no. Yeah. So, I mean, take this example that Braden's talking about, which is we had this in-person retro every week where we like celebrated both our failures and our successes. And it was a really fun process because we had these Post-it notes. It was physical. People would do little drawings. We put them up on the whiteboard. People would pile on. People were moving around a lot. But there's no way that we were going to make that work remotely because you had to be in the room.
And there's no way we're going to make Chris like participate in that physical experience in a way, because he wouldn't be able to experience it. It would be exclusionary.
Yeah. So we had to think through, okay, what are the goals of this exercise? The goals of this exercise are to raise awareness of work that happened over the week, normalize failure and challenges as expected parts of working, help the team feel connected, and then have some like fun and levity in the process. And then we essentially worked back from that to a few different ways of running it. But does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
But yeah, I think a lot of work is cargo culted. So you take a practice that you heard from reading the Netflix culture deck or something that Spotify does, and you say, okay, Spotify does that, therefore we're going to do it. But you don't understand the context in which Spotify was deploying that tool. So if you then talk to the engineering leaders at Spotify or how they're doing it, you get more context, and you can figure out how to deploy it in your workplace. But don't just take the tool. Think about what the purpose is before you deploy it.
No, right, that makes sense. Yep, go ahead.
I'm thinking through a couple other things we did like this. And another technique that I've used a bunch with facilitating is to give individuals in the room different roles. So like when you're in a room all together and you all post notes, everyone has access to the same space and the same stuff. And that can be hard sometimes when you're distributed. People have different access to communications, and the tools just don't work that collaboratively that well. So for example, we did a run through of our product recently, and we were trying to figure out all the ways that we could notice that it could be better. There's also user research and things you would do, but that's what we were trying to do in the moment. And so we gave one person the job, okay, you drive, you run through the experience. And then I had the role of scribe. I will listen to all the things that people say in the room and write it down and make sure that we're capturing it correctly. And then I think you probably took up the role of like keeping things moving and making sure we are on time and pace. And then everyone contributed with things that they noticed. And it would be very hard to do that where everyone was on the same page. But once we divvied up the roles, it became really easy to do it from a remote perspective.
Yeah.
One person was in spreadsheets, one person was screencasting, everyone was talking.
Yeah. So I think one thing to acknowledge is that there is awkwardness, and awkwardness is kind of essential. And you have to move through the awkwardness in order to get the vulnerability and trust and the high performance. So some of the in-person, so I think in some ways it makes everything better because it forces that awkwardness and they have to get through. And then it becomes more inclusive and more open for everyone.
But how do you push through that awkwardness? I could see the value, the end, that the value of having everyone vulnerable with each other because and trusting each other. Yeah, trusting each other and vulnerable with each other. But how do people get to a place where they can do that? I know you guys are talking about kind of progressively more vulnerable questions, but you can, I'm just picturing, you know, I'm pretty extroverted and I'm very transparent. My wife's quite reserved and introverted. Yeah. And so for her to like jump on a team and then people starting asking like, oh, like what's your deepest fear? You know, it's like, whoa, what the heck is this place? You know, I'm not ready to do that, but yeah. So maybe what are your thoughts on that?
So I think it trust doesn't come first. It's not trust then vulnerability. Vulnerability comes first, then trust.
Okay.
And there's a lot of research into the psychology of this. And if you express vulnerability early on, it's actually contagious. So it requires, you know, kind of like a mindful approach to the situation. You know, if a positive intent and creating space for people, and it does take intentionality, but that intentionality can be awkward, but ultimately it gets you to a better place.
So if they're seeing this, you know, if my wife, for example, is seeing this happening in the company and everyone's kind of sharing their deepest fear, then she'll feel safer to do it. Is that what you mean?
It has to be authentic. So there's Brené Brown talks about this in some interesting ways, where there's this like fake vulnerability or this sort of like pseudo vulnerability where you share things that seem vulnerable and personal, but they're not the real things that are holding you back. They're not your real fears or your real uncertainties or anxieties. So you have to have this authentic vulnerability. And so admit failure, admit not knowing, you know, it's like a whole, like almost like craft, I think, or like an approach to being. But the end result is you get the most out of everyone, right? Not just the extroverted people.
How, you know, part of the subtext for the podcast is building teams with less drama. And so how do you kind of, I can see the value of everyone being able to feel safe with one another. But what happens, like, if you have someone who's just not at that place, right? They're incredible technologists or very, very skilled at their technical kind of tasks, whatever it is, marketing or sales or development. But like, they're just having issues being able to open up, and they're starting to be shifting away from where everyone's kind of shifting away to become more vulnerable with each other. But you know, you have maybe one or two people that are kind of stuck, and there's this natural, like, they're not able to share.
I think you have to ask, like, why aren't they? Like, what's holding them back? Why do they not feel safe? And there's the fundamental attribution error is that would be to say that this is a problem with them, but it's more likely than not like a systemic issue, and there's something going on with the environment that's preventing them from feeling safe and connected. So I think you have to look at it as a system problem and diagnose it, but then also understand that it's not always going to work for everyone. And team fit is a really important component. And that as we're building teams, we have to think like, is this person going to add perspective and come into this team and gel?
How could you kind of validate? We talked a lot about vulnerability and feeling safe, but kind of these very soft, you know, cultural fits, you know, it's different than kind of, are you a test-driven development person, which are kind of hard skills. You can look at their code and find out, but like, how do you validate if these people are going to be good fits to be able to work at home and manage their time, or, you know, they're going to want to be in a place where they feel safe and open up? Like, how can you figure that out from doing 3 or 4 interviews with someone?
I mean, I think you can catalog the traits that they're not completely amorphous. So what are things that make people successful in your team? What are the values? What are the traits? And then in the interview process, look for evidence of those traits. So you can have interviews that create an environment where people can demonstrate those traits, so like curiosity or self-awareness or empathy. And then you can also ask about career history, like talk through situations, like have them tell you stories where they can demonstrate how they might have expressed some of these things that you care about.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
I think people think of this as you know, and soft and amorphous and hard to quantify, but I think it's easier than people think. I think you just have to be intentional and like dig for it.
Makes sense. But it seems so much harder. It's like you found this person who's technical person, try for these also these kind of softer things, and it's going to be so hard to find like these perfect bits that have it all, you know. But it sounds important.
Yeah, it's totally important. I mean, your ability to balance a red black tree is probably less correlated with your chance of being a successful teammate than your ability to empathize with others or your ability to communicate through written form, for instance.
Yeah, that makes sense. Range, it seems this whole idea of getting people on the same page is really important. It's really asynchronous, which is where people can kind of catch up on their own time. It's trying to remove the synchronicity, I think is the right word, of meetings. So kind of avoiding meetings when you don't need to have them. You know, have you guys, I'm sure you guys have thought about it. When is the right time to have a meeting? When is it an okay time to just say, no, we don't need to meet about this. Like, let's just hash it out through some sort of email platform or chat or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we do is a couple things. One is that we've realized that some of the most boring parts of meetings is the status update. It's the, here's what I did. And I might go way too long for Dan to be interested in, but one of my other coworkers might really like my level of detail in that meeting. And I would spend all that time in that meeting telling these three people, then I go to my next meeting and I have to tell another eight people. And so you end up repeating yourself a ton. People get bored, their eyes gloss over. But it's often the only time managers get a sense to know what their team is doing day to day. So the first thing we realized is like, we should really, really try to pull status updates out of meetings as much as possible. And that's part of the core of Range. The other is that we saw so many cultures in our early research for this company where they would tell us, we just have way too many meetings. Like we need less meetings, and we've tried everything. We've tried to like wipe the slate clean and the meetings just came back. We don't really understand why. And it struck us that the meetings were really the symptom of other stuff going on. For example, if me feeling like my work is seen and appreciated is done in the meeting, right? If that's when my boss and all the people around me see the work that I'm doing, you can't get rid of that meeting. That's where I feel appreciated. Or if the only way I learn things in organizations is to go to a bunch of meetings to try to learn them, you can't get rid of those meetings. I'm going to still go to them all. So one of the things we do in our meetings tool is make sure that the notes that people take are put into Slack and searchable and everything like that. So it's really easy to know what happened in a meeting without going to it. We have things like reactions so you can thank people for their work so that I can feel thanked and appreciated and seen for the work that I'm doing without attending a meeting. So what we're trying to do with the like too many meetings problem is to attack a bunch of the root causes that people end up going to meetings rather than just default to this has to be another meeting. Mm-hmm. That said, like there are lots of really good reasons to have meetings. Like anytime you feel stuck and need to work through something with coworkers, high bandwidth connections like the ones we're having now where we're talking back and forth are really, really valuable for that stuff. And also the ritual, honestly. Like, you know, I've heard people talk negatively about having recurring meetings as a bad thing. And I think they can be bad if you're not mindful about it. If a bad meeting just continues to drone on and everyone hates it, that's a bad recurring meeting. But there's also some very positive ways, like we start out the week every Monday, we close it out every Friday. And those are bits of ritual in our company that were very intentional in design, but build kind of a rhythm and a cadence of the work that gives people a sense of knowing what's going to happen each week and a venue for where they bring different topics.
It's almost like an anchor, right? For them, mm-hmm. probably.
Absolutely.
Wow. I had never considered those potential. Yeah. So what I was saying was I had never considered that either, like those two potential root causes for meetings is I want to show off my work and feel appreciated and, you know, that my work is valuable and for managers to like find out what people are doing. Like now that you say it, it makes a lot of sense, but I've never heard those actually articulated anywhere before.
Yeah, a lot of companies they're not explicit about what the purpose of meetings are. So they just have meetings and it becomes, you have a meeting because you do meetings, but you don't talk about why you're having the meeting. So one of the things we encourage is every meeting should have a purpose and people should know why it exists. And I think without that, so what I found is actually at Medium, we considered meetings a core competency into training. We had facilitation, we had formal structures. And we'd have these incredibly efficient, quick meetings that people actually loved, which is really funny. So we'd had 17 engineers in a meeting, which is a crazy number of people, but we'd burn through, update from all 17 teams, resolve some issues, and then everyone would be out 15 minutes early. Whereas in my previous job at Google, we'd have hour-long meetings about one topic that we'd have, just one specific topic, and we'd still run over. So I think if you approach it as a skill that you need to develop in your organization, they can become incredibly efficient, incredibly effective, and people actually like them.
Do people get pushed back when you say, hey, could I get an agenda for this meeting? I guess I've asked that when other people have made meetings and that they've kind of pushed onto me and I've said, hey, well, like, what's the agenda? And then they get all offended, you know, or I push it, make an agenda. Sometimes people appreciate it, but sometimes people they get frustrated with that. Like,
maybe that's another example of the awkwardness that you have to push through. So why are they getting offended? And maybe it's about explaining why an agenda ahead of time would be helpful, or what do you need in order to show up successfully at the meeting? So, and again, this comes through communication styles and psychology. Like, some people process information differently. So if you walk into a meeting with no idea of what the agenda is, you'll be caught flat-footed and it'll be incredibly stressful for you. So other people, like, you know, can live on the moment. But if you get the agenda ahead of time, you can start processing things, you can pull together your ideas, then you can feel like you can show up to the meeting and be as successful as possible. So I think just talk about people's needs, like, what is your need? Why do you need the agenda? And what do they need in order to be successful in that meeting?
Wow. Maybe the last thing is, people are hearing you talk and they're thinking, wow, my team is not at that level of self-awareness. I don't feel like I can talk to my coworker that way, where if I ask them for an agenda, like, they're going to blow up at me, or, you know, some of these other things that you've talked about that are really beautiful. Like, how can I, as an individual in my company, whether I'm a manager or just, you know, maybe at the working level, kind of try to encourage that, where it sounds like vulnerability and safety, mm-hmm. and belonging are kind of these, where is the goal that we need to get to be able to have mm-hmm. those kind of relationships? What can I do?
I think, you know, it's difficult in environments where everyone is on guard and everyone's worried about failure. Everyone's tense. And in those environments, like, the best way that I've found to diffuse it is to start being vulnerable yourself. And it can be really scary, right? Because in those environments, you might worry that someone's going to pounce on you and make fun of you or whatever. If I come in and say, man, I'm a little hungover this morning, people are like, that guy, he's like, like, not doing his job well, no one should come into the office that way, right? But, you know, that happens a fair amount from time to time, you know. And if you can be a bit more vulnerable about how you're showing up to a meeting, it encourages other people to talk about their life. Maybe they didn't sleep well that night. Maybe they're really excited because they had too much caffeine. There's lots of things that we bring to meetings, and that will just start to soften how you interact with each other and understand the lens that other people are seeing the world through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also worth calling out that not everyone has the privilege to be the person starting down the path of vulnerability. So there's different groups intrinsically less safe in these like difficult workplaces. So for those of us who, you know, white, male, English, it's incumbent on us to role model and put ourselves in the uncomfortable position, because we have the privilege to talk about being hungover and not to have that negatively affect our next performance review.
I want to be clear, I'm not hungover right now.
No? Okay. It's fine. Listen, I don't judge. You're vulnerable with me. I appreciate that.
But I think I completely agree with Braden, but I just think it's not blanket advice that you can give to everyone. Yeah. Some people just don't have the privilege to be able to act that way. Then the other thing I would say is that talk about, like, why is it important, and what's the outcome? We're not just doing this to be, you know, to be fuzzy and fluffy and like all hug each other. We're doing this because it makes work more fun. We'll be more creative and we'll be more effective. And if you look at professional sports teams, they put a lot of intention into how they train, how they work together, how they connect. Why aren't we approaching work in a similar mindset? So we want to look at how we work, how we show up, and how we, you know, develop our skills and crafts.
One more question I have to ask. Gossip in companies. Have you guys thought about, like, what's the root cause of why this happens? I've encountered it a lot, like these kind of toxic backbiting environments, whether it's in, you know, in a large government entity or in small startups, like, mm-hmm. you know, where does that come from? Like, have you thought about it? Just because you guys are very intentional about looking at least one level deeper into relationships and teams and working together better. Do you have any ideas there?
I've not thought about it much. My instinct is it's probably very evolutionary, that early bands of humans really cared to understand how to gather knowledge, and specifically to gather knowledge about status and other people. And it's probably very, very deep in our roots, that mm-hmm. desire to talk about other people, to talk about status, and to share information verbally amongst us. But I don't, yeah. maybe you have a better sense of like why it...
I can't completely remember. I have read some about this, and you're right. It does have an evolutionary underpinnings related to power dynamics. So mm-hmm. it was information flow outside traditional power structures. But I think people gossip because their needs aren't met, is essentially what it comes down to. And like the act of gossiping, either it makes them feel like they're in the know, or it makes them feel connected, or it surfaces some tension or dissatisfaction that they have otherwise no outlet to get out. So it's probably a very natural human occurrence, but also when it becomes toxic, indicates that people's needs aren't being met.
I love it. So time to look deeper into our company
I think when you think about it emerging, gossip often emerges around a theme. So if people are gossiping around, hey, did you hear Bob got promoted? Can't believe Bob got promoted. Probably what that means is that there's some perception of unfairness in the system where someone is getting recognized unfairly, and they just don't feel like they can express that through formal channels. So it's probably actually a really good signal of organizational dysfunctions and possible, areas to focus on.
Wow. Dan, Braden, thanks a lot for coming on the show today. This has been
thanks for having us.
Great. Yeah, of course. It's a pleasure. Well, listeners, if this really resonates with you and you feel you want to be more vulnerable with each other, certainly you can come up with your own ways of doing it, but maybe check out Range. It seems like a great way to just bring people closer together to be happier, more productive, and have more fun as well. Thanks again, gentlemen, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Cheers.
All right. See you soon. Thank you. Hey, listeners, we're really trying to get the message out about how remote teams can be so awesome. If you found this podcast helpful, would you take 60 seconds to leave us a review in iTunes? It helps us rank to have more people learn about this show, and it helps us know which content is the most helpful. As a thank you, I'll try to read every review on the show and give you a shout out. Thanks a lot!